Welcome to Sci-Fi on Screen, the podcast that goes where no podcast has gone before. We here at Sci-Fi on Screen take a deep, close look at your favorite genre movies of science fiction, horror, fantasy, and comic book land. We go deep, scene by scene. We do comparisons of originals and remakes, and special shows. Just ahead, a new episode. And thanks for listening. Welcome back to another episode. This week I'm going to be taking a look at 1976 sci-fi epic Logan's Run, directed by Michael Anderson. Before I get into the background, I just want to offer a big word of thanks to two listeners who recently pledged to Sci-Fi on Screen via Patreon, and that would be Daniel Falch and Brock Barth. So Daniel and Brock, thank you so much for the Patreon support. I really appreciate it. And I mostly tell people, you know, hey, go for $1 an episode. It'd be, at this rate, it's like $2 a month since I'm only doing it every other week at this point, and like 20 something bucks a year. And it would be a great way to support the podcast. So anyway, thanks to Daniel and Brock. I also wanted to give a shout out to the folks at Potter and Family. I just started retweeting podcasts that I dig that are part of the Potter and Family on Twitter. It's hashtag Potter and Family, all one word. So I got some great feedback, and I got some folks that are following me now, and just got access to a great new world of podcasts and a lot of genre stuff, which I like. So it was a great discovery, and thanks to everyone out there at Potter and Family and who's part of Potter and Family. I feel like I'm in good company. Okay, so the little background to Logan's Run, there's not a lot of information about the film, so I thought I would just kind of go over the inspiration for the film. There was a novel written by two guys, William F. Nolan and George Clayton Johnson, published in 1967. Big difference in the two is that in the novel, the age of Carousel is 21, and of course in the movie it's 30. So not only was the novel Logan's Run written, there were sequels, one titled Logan's World and one titled Logan's Search. And then later on there was a novelette titled Logan Falls. And there are definitely big divergences in the novel versus the movie. In the novel, besides being 21 as the age of Carousel, when Logan and Jessica escape from the city, they hop on a rocket, Cape Canaveral, and head out to a colony orbiting Mars, which is where Sanctuary is. They don't return, and there's another figure, a major character in the book named Ballard, which is interesting. I wonder if they named it after sci-fi writer J.G. Ballard. This figure, Ballard, is sort of the facilitator of this sort of, you know, futuristic underground railroad, if you will. He remains to continue to get more people out of the city. So in the sequel, Logan's World, Logan returns to Earth from Mars to continue and help Ballard. And then in the novel, Logan's Search, Logan sort of goes into an alternate reality to do kind of the same thing. And I'm wondering if it was kind of just a cheap device by the writers to just kind of rewrite the original again, but in an alternate reality. So George Clayton Johnson, I believe, is the one of the authors, continues to make rumblings that he's going to come out with a book from Jessica's point of view. So who knows? But so that's sort of the background for that. And I couldn't find too much production background for this film. So I'm not exactly sure how it came to be and what were the players and what were the movements in it. So I'm going to jump right into the film itself. We start out with a title card on the screen, and it's, quote, sometime in the 23rd century, the survivors of war, overpopulation, and pollution are living in a great domed city, sealed away from the forgotten world outside. Here, in an ecologically balanced world, mankind lives only for pleasure, freed by the servo mechanisms which provide everything. There's just one catch. Life must end at 30 unless reborn in the fiery ritual of Carousel. End quote. So we're treated to some exterior scenes of domes in what looks like an unnamed kind of barren landscape. Pretty unremarkable looking special effects in this film, especially the models and the miniature work. Even for the 70s, like I've seen better stuff done like in 70s, but it looks very fake. So strangely enough, they definitely did not have tons of money. This is not like a big sci-fi epic like we know today. They definitely did not have as much money as it would have taken to maybe make this stuff pop a little bit. As we zoom into these domes, it basically looks like a fabric that someone had taken some shiny fabric and, you know, shaped it in the shape of some domes. So inside we get a what looks like a pretty stock model train set, you know, which is the main city. We hear some computer-like soundtrack cues coming from Jerry Goldsmith, who is the soundtrack composer. And again, you know, when you look inside the city, you see these hollow tubes in which these conveyances run inside, and it all looks extremely fake. Like, none of it really feels real or even remotely approaches real. So we cut to a nursery, and the camera is closed up on an infant child that's just been born. We see a crystal embedded in the palm, which is clear. And then we see Logan 5, played by actor Michael York, tapping on the glass. And we see his hand. The crystal is actually red. In the novel, the crystal colors change every 7 years. So we get the crystals are yellow from birth to 6 years old, blue 7 to 13 years old, and red 14 to 20, then red and black on last day. In this film, I think they're clear from infancy to a certain point, and then they're greens. So I think it's like, I don't know, I'm totally guessing here because they don't really specify it, but I think it's like you're clear until you're like maybe 6 or 7, and then you're green until probably you're like 18, 19, maybe an adult, and then you're red, you know, until you're 30, and then you go, you blink and go black, but it's not stated exactly. Francis 7 comes in, and we see he and Logan are dressed in a very specific costume, black bodysuits with these stripes across them. And Francis 7 is played by this actor Richard Jordan. They are Sandmen, and these characters are authorized to terminate runners who refuse to join Carousel when their palms begin flashing and go to black at 30 years. We get a brief set of these tube cards that are used to move around. They run on tracks and over bridges through these clear tubes, and it's a cool idea. You know, it's definitely futuristic city cool, as it were. It's nice to look at, but they didn't get it out of the toy train set vibe. So whenever you're looking at it, you know, and the movie wants you to take it seriously as a real landscape, it's just like, you know, I want to see some guy's foot going by in the background because it all just looks very fake, unfortunately. So we get a little exposition. The two Sandmen enter this, I think it's called Arcade. They have a bunch of different places called Cathedral, then Arcade, and they don't specifically say what each one is, but I think Arcade is kind of like the entertainment area, and Cathedral is this place that's kind of where wild youngsters run around unsupervised. And they kind of talk about the setup of the civilization, not much. They suspect that since several Sandmen are in Carousel that evening, that they're going to be renewed in the bodies of the infants that they were just looking at. So I think this is why kind of Logan was there looking, like some people they know are going to go on Carousel and they're going to be reborn inside these new bodies, and they were hoping. And there's some exposition about the setup of a society. So, you know, at the risk of being redundant, you know, the setup here is that when you're 30 years old, you don these masks and you go into this chamber and, you know, which I'll describe briefly, and you are, you know, you take part in this process in which you disappear in a fiery display. The local mythology is that you renew and your soul and what makes you you goes into a body of a newborn. And in this way, you know, you continue to, and you know, Carousel being in and around, that you continue on and on. It's just that this is the cycle of the civilization. So the production design here, as they're walking around, is definitely like, to me, it's more like 70s TV show. Like, it doesn't, this movie, to me, never feels like a cinematic experience. It's like a kind of a pumped up, you know, episode of Damnation Alley or Star Trek. A lot of shiny surfaces, people all wearing like these colored togas or tunics. Only the Sandmen dress in shirts and pants. You know, everyone else is in very vibrant colors. And I think the colors are worn to also denote their crystal color. So reds wear red, greens wear green, so on and so forth. There's a giant metal statue in the middle of Arcade with a crystal embedded in it. Kind of neat looking. And we're starting to get a little bit of Logan's character. And, you know, we don't get much. One of my criticisms of this movie, which I'll get to, is there's not much in the way of character. But we hear Logan and Francis, Logan beginning to question, like, you know, do people renew? And is this the way our society should be set up? And Francis telling him, you know, this is the way it is and people do renew and why are you questioning things? So we're setting up Francis to be sort of the conservative who wants things to be the way they are, and Logan being sort of the, you know, the more imaginative of the two, questioning things and not wanting to sort of believe everything that's been handed him, probably because he's got 3 or 4 years left and then it's his turn. And we hear stuff like, you know, we're getting a sense of how people are born too, which we hear, you know, who your seed mother was. Of course not. I'm curious, not sick. So I get a sense that reproduction has become kind of Matrix-ish where, you know, human beings are, I guess there's still birth, but there's absolutely no family structure whatsoever. And we don't get too deep into how children are raised. I mean, there needs to be some sort of, I would imagine, some adult guidance that happens, but it's not done in terms of like familial setups. Like it seems to be not with your birth parents and not in a nuclear family that things are done maybe more communally at some point. The next sequence is we are attending a carousel. What's great is I do really like the voice of the computer, which is, it's played by the female runner who they wind up killing at some point, this woman named Lara Lindsay, she's uncredited as the voice of the computer. I always thought it was Farrah Fawcett Majors because they sound very similar, but the voice of the AI is really chilling in this, sort of, you can imagine a female Hal who's a little more sinister. So I really like the feel, and I like the whole carousel sequence because there's this weird kind of gong sound that continues to happen, and between the gong and the woman's voice, it's very chilling, man. It's one of the few times this movie is the cinematic effects are work. So we hear the computer saying last day of Capricorn 15s, year of the city 2274. So I guess anyone named, you know, Capricorn-15, you know, you have Logan 5, Francis 7. These are the iterations of that, I guess, stock or that clone. I'm assuming they're clones of each other. So we see in the arena, the lights go down. The Capricorn 15s enter all in these white robes, and we don't see their faces right away. And there's a large glowing crystal in the center. And as the carousel starts to spin, there's a crystal also near the top, and some field is created between the two where all the people on carousel slowly rise. And as this begins, the people in carousel remove their hoods and their faces are covered in this like white lacquer hockey mask, which is just great. It's kind of a chilling moment. And the announcer voice says, "Identify," and they all hold up their palms showing the flashing red. And the white crystal at the top of the dome exudes some kind of force which comes down around everything. Pretty cool. And so the cool part here is that the figures, as the carousel starts to turn, the figures slowly rise up from the floor. And they're all kind of moving and spinning in this area. It was a very difficult thing to do physically for the shot. I think they did some of it where they lowered people down and did a reverse shot. Some of them went up. I'll talk a little bit about that in the trivia. The carousel participants drop their robes, and they're all wearing this kind of spandex with flames on it, which is a little cheesy. But, you know, the music that Goldsmith uses here makes it very spooky. And they're kind of like caught in this tornado. As they sweep upwards, they start to go lateral and spin around. And as they reach the top, we see that they vanish in some sparkly conflagration. Like something happens near the top when they touch that crystal and they vanish. And obviously, you know, the crowd is going crazy. You know, they're chanting renew or renew. Somehow this is very exciting. We see these people vanish. And obviously at the end of this sequence, all of the people who were on carousel will wind up vanishing in these fiery flashes. Supposedly, it's believed to be renewed in new bodies. Right at the ultimate moment of carousel, Logan gets a little flash and on his little, he's got a device on his belt, which really made me think of a tricorder, frankly. And he's told that there's another runner in another part of the city that's loose. And so obviously he and Francis are needed. So they leave. And this device also functions as a tracker, which beeps and increases in volume and, you know, in speed as they get nearer to the target. So the chase is on for our first runner chase. And the guns are cool that they use. When they fire the gun, they're these black guns. They look like zip guns with a little handle underneath. They fire these guns, and we see kind of flame or fire come out of four ports in the barrel. And then we don't see anything come out of them. We just see, you know, sort of something explode. Usually when they hit, whatever it is that they discharge burns. It's almost like they're like napalm guns or something. Something sparks and, you know, things burn into flesh or into the ground. But I think they're just really cool design. I really like them. You know, and that we're doing a science fiction gun without the laser effects, which I guess were probably pretty hard to do anyway. So it was pretty clever. So then we've got a foot chase And it's a guy who they're chasing. And we can see that the Sandmen are kind of cruel and that they're pretty much playing with the guy. And they could have killed him on many occasions, but instead they toy with him, shooting around him, hurting him into certain locations, forcing him to run. And it's kind of a cruel thing to see. And he's finally cornered on an upper level and leaps to his death. And when Logan goes down to the ground and he finds some strange object that the guy was carrying, and he winds up pocketing it, which we don't see what it was, and takes a bunch of other items and puts it into this little purse that he's got on his belt. So him and Francis, you know, they congratulate each other and they leave, and we see this cleanup crew come, and like these two sort of jetpack hovercraft kind of come, and they spray something over the body, and it immediately, we watch it decompose, actually. It's kind of gruesome. It's almost like we watch it decompose completely until it's absolutely nothing left on the ground. Now, afterwards, we hop to Logan 5 at his swinging 60s or 70s bachelor pad, I should say, very bored, and he takes a controller, and we see in part of the apartment that he's in, there's a portal. Looks, you know, kind of looks like a single transport pad. He's flicking the controller, and we see figures of women appearing in this chamber and then disappearing, appearing and disappearing. First there's a man, then there's a woman, and then we finally get Jenny Agutter, who's the co-star, who's Jessica Six, and she actually materializes and steps out into his apartment. And it's funny, I was thinking that, you know, back in 1977, it's kind of like the prototype for online dating, you know, or just online porn, if you will. You know, here he is, he's home with his device in his hand, and he's flicking back, looking for a woman to have sex with. You know, kind of a combination of prostitution and porn and online dating all in one. It's called The Circuit. So I guess, you know, in this world, if you're feeling lonely and you're home one night and you want to connect physically with someone, you put yourself in, quote, The Circuit. And if you're in The Circuit, you're scanned. And if someone wants to choose you, I guess they'll press a button on this little dot, on this little device, and you will appear in their apartment. You don't know who you're going to be with before that. You just appear and there they are. So I don't know, just very interesting. I remember it. One of the things I remember about this film when I saw it when I was younger is that thing. And especially I remember it more and more as we get more into the 90s and the 2000s when computers and things like this are coming back, you know, are sort of moving into our society. How prescient it kind of was in that here's this society based on pleasure and ease. And that he would just, you know, he'd pick a girl for the night, you know. So anyway, I really like that notion of the film. It's very clever. Somehow she put herself on the circuit, but she's not really into it. So Logan's ready to rock and roll. She's not into it. And Logan's like, are you kidding? And so I like the line. She's like, I felt sad, so I put myself on the circuit, but I think it was a mistake. So, you know, how many times does that happen to, you know, people being motivated to go out and do certain things because of loneliness and then changing their mind, right? So I don't know. I kind of liked it in what this ultimately will be a B movie. Like, I thought it was a pretty truthful, pretty good line. She said she's sad because a friend of hers was on Carousel and she's scared. She's sad that he's now dead. And Logan is kind of aware that here's someone who does not believe in renewal. And she's very much adamant that Sandmen are killers. Part of Logan's character that has to be is he, you know, he is very unknowing. He, in a way, he is an innocent. He's the classic callow, you know, he's kind of like Luke Skywalker, right? He's a very callow hero. He doesn't know anything. He has a lot of preconceived notions about things that will change as the movie goes on. But he's very much like, I've never killed anyone in my life. I only terminate runners, which is interesting. So, you know, there you have the two sides of the belief of what the society does. So then Francis pops in with a couple of girls. He's been out carousing. You know, Jessica Six winds up leaving at that point. And so we have this funny moment where Francis pops some kind of device that puts a fog, like a pink fog, purple haze, if you will, a pink haze, in the room. And as it sort of sinks down and they all, I think it's sort of like proto-ecstasy or meth or whatever it is. But obviously it's a, you know, it's a drug that's inhaled and they kind of have sex and carouse inside this substance, which was, I just thought was pretty clever. So the next day, Francis and Logan both head to like Sandman headquarters, which is pretty cool production design. It's kind of a Death Star looking chamber, slick black floors. It's a big place with a lot of machinery on the side. Looks pretty cool. What they do is they put all these items from captured Sandmen into a vestibule where the artificial intelligence of the city sort of scans it and eventually winds up de-resing it, so it kind of disappears. So Francis goes in first and he's asked to identify, which is kind of like the tag word in this film, identify, which is what the AI always asks people to do before anything happens. And he puts all the objects in, the AI scans it, and they vanish, and then Francis leaves. And then Logan does the same, but something different happens now. He's asked to sit down in a chair facing this machine. The AI shows him an outline of this object that he found from the woman runner, which is called an Ankh, which I guess is kind of like a cross between, you know, a Christian cross and like an AIDS ribbon, kind of. I guess it's an old Egyptian symbol. So the AI asks Logan to identify it, and he has no idea what it is. He's never seen it before. And the AI knows that there's a word associated with it called sanctuary. And we get this notion that in pre-catastrophe times, which is a little throwaway sci-fi lines, or something bad has happened to set up these domed cities, that the object and the word relate to runners not accounted for. And the AI shows him that there are over 1,000 unaccounted runners so far. And here's where the film gets a little confusing, because I don't get a sense of what this means. From Logan's reaction in the movie, it seems to mean that no one has ever renewed, but that doesn't make any sense. We don't know how long Carousel has been going on. And the last Carousel looked to be about 30, 40 people. I mean, you know, Logan's close to in his 20s. I'm sure that has gone on for a long, long time. So, okay, so there's 1,000 unaccounted runners. That makes sense. But for him to be confused and think that that means that no one has ever renewed, like the film fails to connect those two. It just states it. But it doesn't make any sense at all in the film. So it's clunky and needlessly confusing. I think they could have done, with one or two lines of dialogue, that could have cleared this up right away and allowed you to understand there has to be another way for Logan to be tipped off that no one has ever renewed, if that's where they're going. And second of all, you know, what these unaccounted runners. So, you know, I'm a little disappointed in the movie. There's no reason why this had to be, you know, as sort of opaque as it was. Now, a really interesting thing escalates that the AI wants him to leave the city and search outside the dome for sanctuary. And, you know, we also don't get much in the way of the AI's motivations. Like, obviously, the AI wants the society to stay exactly as it is. We don't know why. No one rules the AI, so we don't see, like, a human council that's telling the AI what to do. It seems to rule and run everything. And so we don't know why it's so hopped up about sanctuary and why it's, you know, runners being. So, but yeah, part of this film also is a mistake, is that why running is such a terrible thing? Why don't they just let people go out into the wasteland? And if they believe it's a wasteland to die, why are they so desperate to hold them? You know, it's just another flaw a little bit in the writing that they just don't do a lot of this detail where you're really getting the sense of, you know, the nuts and bolts of how the society is knit together. For me, anyway, I don't get it. They just present it as something, you know, as a tautology that you just have to accept, like, this is the way it is. And you're like, okay, this is the society. But when you're in the movie and you're wanting to build drama, like, you know, I don't really know the guts behind all this. It's just a layer that I can't go down into when I want to, you know, maybe get real with the movie. So he's like, look, I got 4 more years. My crystal's still red. You know, how am I going to pose as a runner going to sanctuary? So he puts his hand on this little identify sort of scanner, and it changes his life clock. And when he pulls it away, it's blinking, and he's freaking out. And this is actually what happens here is kind of a neat moment where he's like, you know, question, will I get my 4 years back? And the AI never answers him. And he's told to take the Ankh with him and nothing else. And he leaves, but he has no idea now whether he's being sort of sent to the slaughter or whether he's going to get his years back. So, you know, this is your setup, basically. And I think what saves the movie from this dustbin of, you know, kind of old science fiction, silent running, anyone, is the conceptual novelty that I think is really solid here. I mean, look at all the things we've been introduced to since we've started. You know, the notion of how you were raised, the Sandmen and runners, the Carousel, a society that cuts off life at 30, the circuit and how you meet people, the different ages and different palm colors, all in the self-contained domed society, and we don't really know why it's there or what's outside. So it's pretty good. Like, there's a lot of really cool ideas here. And, you know, Logan is questioning things, so we kind of like him as our lead guy, you know, and Jessica Six, we don't know much yet, but pretty solid setup, I have to say. I think the film falters in the last third, unfortunately, but I think I can go back and watch Logan's Run because it's pretty cool in its conception. I feel like it begs to be remade. So we cut to, you know, their version of a gym, which is kind of goofy. You know, people working out with the big balls and doing, you know, what in the 70s they considered futuristic exercises. And Francis is in a hot tub. Now Logan is really hot to trot questioning his society because from his point of view, he's been told that no one ever renews. So he's questioning Francis. Do you know anyone who's ever been renewed? Have you ever seen anyone renewed? And Francis doesn't even answer him. He's kind of pushing back against, like, why are you bothering to ask questions? Have fun, relax. We did a good job yesterday. Back in his place, Jessica actually returns back. He's actually had her brought back, and she rejects him again. But this time he shows her his palm that's flashing red, and he tells her that he's going to run, and he thinks that she knows something about Sanctuary because she is wearing the ankh that's dangling from a choker around her neck, the same ankh that he got off of the runner. And so she, you know, she leaves, and he follows her without her knowing. And we cut to a scene of her meeting with some friends, and we see that she's part of something. So we assume that she is part of, like, a, you know, a cell that helps runners escape. But what we hear them talking about is, you know, that Logan's kind of now aware of them, and they realize they need to kill Logan straight away, and that Jessica is actually going to set him up since he's actually heard of the term Sanctuary. So they go together to Arcade, where it's very busy, and she's kind of leading him to his death. A couple of the Sanctuary crew are kind of hovering about. But he gets a runner alarm in his little pouch, and he bolts and takes Jessica with him. We hear that the runner they're going after is a guy who's caught up another Sandman. We've seen it earlier when they went to, like, you know, Sandman headquarters. There was a guy who was really bloody. And so the word is that this runner is still out and about, and now Logan is going to track him. And so it's a little ridiculous that he takes Jessica with him on this, because first of all, they're going after a really dangerous runner, and, you know, this is his job, tracking these fugitives, and that, you know, Jessica's just going to come with him, like, you know, like he's going to the store. So, but whatevs. This time they're going to Cathedral, and we're told that where in Cathedral is where sort of young children up to a certain age, I guess when they become greens, maybe, or where they become reds, I'm not sure, but they run wild and they're unsupervised. You know, it's kind of like the nether zone. He says it's a reservation for violent delinquents, a rundown quadrant of the city. And again, not much production design to speak of here. This is like a, this is really like a Star Trek episode, big time. It kind of reminded me of a few Star Trek episodes while I was watching it. And they find a small child named Mary Two, and she steals Jessica's bracelet while kind of playing coy and nice. And now the tracker kicks in again, and that's escalating beeping. Now they're surrounded by all of these what they call cubs. Kids, you know, from probably 10 to maybe 15, 16. Again, reminded me of the Star Trek episode when, I think it was Miri, when, you know, these kids live to a certain age. And then when they hit puberty, the aging disease hits them and they grow old and die, like, you know, in hours or days. They surround Logan, and we see the kid who caught up the other guy. He's wielding this sort of sharpened bit of pipe. And this is a little bit of Logan's character. I kind of like him here. Logan taunts him a bit, and he doesn't, you know, we already know enough of Francis Seven that Francis Seven probably would have just shot him in the gut and would have been done with it. But Logan's taunting the kid, saying, hey, you know, you're close to green, which I believe is 15. And he's telling him in front of everyone around, hey, when that happens, the others here are going to kill you. You're not going to be wanted here. And it's sort of like the dark version to the civilization next door. When people, you know, when your hand turns red in Logan's world, you go to Carousel. When your hand turns green in this sort of, you know, secondary world, you know, they're killed by these other children, which is kind of interesting. So I like that. And I like that Logan uses his wits and this information to back the kid off rather than just blasting away and have it be, you know, an action sequence where he kills people. So I kind of like that. And it gives you a little bit more of Logan's character that he, you know, he's not willing to step into violence if he doesn't have to. So they find a runner, this woman, and Logan doesn't kill her and shows her the ankh. And he gives her a gas pellet for defense in case she runs into other runners. And Jessica sees all this and he leaves. And as they leave, we realize that Francis had come to the same location to help Logan in case anything went wrong. Francis sees Logan letting the runner go, and when Logan and Jessica leave, Francis kills the woman straight out.
Don't tell me they don't use money in the 23rd century.
Well, we don't.
Yes, my friends, but we do use money in the 21st century. Let's think about $1 for a minute. If you contribute $1 per episode via Patreon, $4 a month, $52 a year, if you like what I'm doing at Sci-Fi On Screen, you're really enjoying the show, I invite you to become a Patreon subscriber. My first goal I'm setting is $50 per show. I'm at about $26 and change right now. At $50 a show, I would really like to improve the quality of the sound for you guys, and I could buy a really good microphone and a booth so you guys can get the best sound I could possibly provide. So $1 a show a week. Sign up at patreon.com/scifionscreen. There's a button on my website, takes you right to the site. Signing up is a snap, and you're on your way. Until the 23rd century does arrive and we no longer need money, I would love your support via Patreon. Thanks for listening.
Blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. No, blah, blah, blah.
So at this point, Jessica seems to be convinced, and she tells Logan that earlier I was setting you up to be killed, but that, you know, it's still not enough for you to come to my group because they're still not going to believe you, which I think is good. You know, like, then he's not getting a free pass. Now he wants to go to this clinic to get a new face. And, part of this is that you can go into these, what they call new you clinics, and get a full new face job and be, you know, whenever you feel like it. And it's very matter of fact. The assistant to the doctor who meets them is none other than 70s pinup model extraordinaire Farrah Fawcett, and then Farrah Fawcett majors at one point. And she plays the character Holly 13. They can change you basically your entire face. So you sit on a table and there's this spider-like contraption of arms that comes down and they're all armed with lasers. And however you program it, it automatically cuts and heals your entire body and it reshapes it whichever you want. Logan gets on the table and Jessica, you can see that Jessica has a relationship or knows the guy who's in charge of the clinic. He's also part of the club. You know, at one point, the man decides to believe her about his running and decides then not to kill him. But in the middle of the procedure, we see him get a phone call. The doc says, done, with this kind of sinister tone. And so now everything's changed. So he basically presses a couple of buttons and the machine starts going haywire now, as if accidentally. And it's cutting up Logan, slicing up a bit of his clothing. It's kind of creepy. And he gets up to try to escape. And the doc goes in there and they start fighting with each other. But Logan overpowers him, throws him on the table. And this laser machine basically slices him up into like hamburger for the most part. And before they all run off, Francis, the other Sandman, bursts in. And we see, you know, Holly's still there, but we see that, you know, Francis is the one who's then chasing Logan at that point. But Logan knocks him out and takes off with Jessica. So now they're led into this sex club where everything's in slow motion, which is kind of funny. And I think it's another example of whatever drug that they take, this haze that they create. But they shoot it all in slow-mo, which is kind of funny. Logan and Jessica are running him and Francis, and it's all being done in slow-mo and with this goofy, goofy, you know, 70s psychedelic music. So it's kind of a goofy sequence. They exit the room via this secret door, and they're about to be led into this secret chamber where sort of the sanctuary crew hide out. And Logan signals the Sandman back at control, alerting them as to his location. And I never figured out in this movie whether he did it on purpose, letting the Sandman know that he was about to expose, you know, a pack of runners, or he did it by accident. The movie, again, doesn't really make this clear on his motivations here and which way he does it. So they let them in, but they're interrogating Logan, and they don't believe that he's running. And in this one moment, Holly arrives, and she also works at the New York Clinic, and she witnessed the whole thing. So she misinterprets everything that happened back at New U, saying, no, he's, you know, like, to have Farrah Fawcett Majors playing a dumb blonde, you know, the character Holly 13 is basically a dumb blonde. And so Jessica has to, like, no, you're remembering it wrong. Don't you remember there was another Sandman? Don't you remember that Logan didn't try to, you know, like, and Farrah Fawcett Majors is like, oh, wait, the other one. Oh, yes. Yes, it wasn't him. It was the... So it's a really goofy sequence, you know. Farrah playing to type, as it were. They let Logan in, and he, at that point, wants to cut Jessica loose, saying, listen, you've taken me this far, and, you know, I don't know what's coming next. And she refuses to go. The movie doesn't really show us why she's kind of attracted to Logan. So there's nothing really much between them two. There's not really much chemistry, number one, and the movie's not doing much. Jessica's kind of like an empty-headed character through most of this, unfortunately. So there's no real connection here. But at the moment, the Sandmen have now converged on Logan's signal, again, one way or the other, and they wind up blowing up the place and killing all these people. But then I'm confused because he's killing Sandmen now, which makes me think that he inadvertently hit his tricorder and not on purpose. But it's not an easy thing to tell. He and Francis face each other behind, you know, Francis behind some wall, and Logan's about to escape, and Francis is still his buddy. And he's like, look, I see what you did, but everyone has a rough day and you can come back into the fold. I won't say anything. And you have to kill Jessica now to prove that you're one of us. And then we'll go back to the way things are. And instead, Logan kind of shoots around Francis to knock him down and he and Jessica escape. So now they head down this long tunnel, which is kind of a cool set, a little bit of scope to it. Again, a little bit of Star Wars made me think of. Obviously, this came first. Shiny black floor, stuff on the side. Francis is nearing them, and now there's like a little bit of drama. They're asked to produce that Ankh as a key to escape. So Jessica pulls hers off, but she drops it in the water right there. Francis is nearing, so Logan grabs his, and they get through the door. It's basically an elevator, and then they head up the set of stairs, and they're in like an industrial part of the dome, which is down below the city. And there's some talk of what powers the city, which is getting power from seawater. It's not explained exactly how, but we get a little bit of this too at the end of the film, a sense of what it looks like. But so there's the power generation area, and we cut back to Francis, who then has discovered Jessica's key in that bit of water, reaches down, grabs it, and he also gets through the door. So he's in pursuit. This part of the city reminded me, if anyone out there is a video game player, the video game Portal, the first one that came out where, you know, at the end of the game, if you know a little trick, you're basically it's a very short initial game. And at the end of the game, you're kind of tricked and you're heading into this kind of fiery chamber to your demise. And then if you're smart, you recognize that somewhere in the distance there is a portal-friendly surface way off and you can port out. And then it opens up the game and you play like another 45 minutes until you finally get to the main AI and destroy the game. But in the second half of Portal, you are traveling through kind of the back, you know, the back area of the structure that you started in. And it really reminded me, watching Logan's Run, I really thought of, I wonder if the folks who did Portal, you know, at all were inspired by this portion of Logan's Run. Because, man, you know, with the gantry ways and the stairs and everything, just was very similar. So Francis fires on them, breaking one of the, I guess, transparent windows, and a seawall opens up and they're swept into this other chamber. And Logan inadvertently triggers an elevator, and now up they go into this frozen area. And at this point, you know, even though it's kind of a cheesy, you know, sci-fi B-movie to some extent, I like the adventure here is that we don't really know where they're going and where they're going to end up. And they're under the city, and now they're in an elevator, and now they're in this frozen place. So there's definitely a sense of, like, you know, adventure novelty here where at this point now you're going from one different location to the other and about to go outside and continue it. So there's a real cool sense of adventure in this part of the film that I like. So the ice cave, this whole sequence is really goofy, and I feel like it's from an old Battlestar Galactica episode. If anyone remembers the character of Lucifer, when they brought Baltar back to life to sort of hunt the humans, he was attended to by this construct named Lucifer, who had a very soothing voice. And this robot here called Box, and not too elaborate a name here, reminded me of Lucifer. So I think this came first, obviously. Box is this really weird robot on wheels. And supposedly, the information that we get is that Box was a fish preservation robot where he would get fish implanted and all kinds of stuff from the ocean, which is where I guess they not only the powered the city that I get a lot of this food supply from, and he would freeze it. He was kind of like, you know, the food freeze guy, and I guess it would send the fish or send stuff up to the city to be consumed. When the fish stopped coming, he then began to freeze runners. And so all the runners that have ever gotten past that first doorway have ended up in Box's little room, and we see down this long corridor that there are dozens and dozens of bodies frozen upright in these places. And so, you know, Box has basically become this killer freeze robot. Of course, he's about to kill them. He pulls out these two big freeze guns, which are just really goofy looking. And the production design is so bad here that when you're seeing the computer Box, you know, talking, you can see the lips moving of the actor who's inside mouthing it and doing the arms. So it's bad. But Logan is, of course, armed, you know, and he brings down the ice cave on top of Box, which incapacitates him. And the effects are really bad here. And then they get out and they see their very first sunrise. And they look at each other and say, "What is that?" And, you know, Logan says, "I don't know, but it's warm." And some uplifting music. And we see some trees and waterfalls, of course, and they're outside. And we cut back briefly to Francis, who's also following them through the ice cave, and he also walks out into the sun, seeing what they are. There's a there's like a freak out moment you know, they did this in movies back in the day, you know, when, of course, the female character always freaked out and the guy had to, like, you know, steady on, you snap out of it. So a little gecko jumps into Jessica's dress and she freaks out and, you know, Logan grabs her and he's like, take it easy now. It made me think of this kind of scene was parodied in the film Airplane. If anyone remembers that film, is when a woman's freaking out on a plane, you see someone come and shake her and slap her and try to snap her out of it. And then the camera pans back left and there's a whole line of people waiting and someone's got an axe and someone else has got a big pipe. So, you know, rightly mocked as it is. It's basically one of these kind of scenes. So they find this water hole and they dive in and they're swimming around naked. They notice that their palm crystals are clear and they're very much in love. And, you know, Jessica's like, I just want to be with you, Logan. This is wonderful. And so now they start to walk and we see some beautiful matte paintings in this film. There's a wonderful matte painting, the first look we get of Washington, D.C., and we only really can tell that it's Washington because of the Washington Monument, and all the other buildings are vine-encrusted. Really cool. And the monument is still there, still very much erect. And I really like the downtown D.C. paintings that they do. And they're wading down a long lake, which if you're looking at the position of the Washington Monument, you realize that they're wading down the reflecting pool. But all around it, rushes have grown up, completely overgrown, obscuring it, which is awesome. And then there's a lot of matte paintings of each of the big monument buildings. They're all ivied and overgrown. And then there's one vine-covered set as they're walking up the steps to the Lincoln Memorial. There are vines covering the steps, and you know, we get a background matte painting with small figures in front. You know, so I really like the DC setup here. You know, for 1976, like it's pretty cool, and I still like looking at it. Even now, in my, you know, very sophisticated and jaded eyes that I've seen all the CGI that we do now, it still works to me. They walk into the Lincoln Memorial, and they're looking at Lincoln's face, and, you know, the statue's covered by ivy. They're recognizing, you know, possibly this is what it means to be old. They've never seen a face like that before, which is a neat idea. They walk through a graveyard, and they notice on some of the graves, beloved husband, beloved wife. And these are terms that at this point they don't understand, but it's a little seed for them learning later. And then there's a shot of them small against the ivy-encrusted Capitol steps. That's just beautiful even now. And another matte painting of the Capitol building, really, really striking. And in the anteroom of the Capitol building, they discover this old man, played by actor Peter Ustinov, who's kind of, you know, addle-brained. He's not quite all there, you know, but curmudgeonly and has, like, you know, dozens and dozens of cats that he takes care of. He knows, of course, now at this point, they ask him about sanctuary because Jessica still believes, and really they both believe that there's this fabled place called sanctuary when they get out of the city that they'll get to. And the old man, of course, knows absolutely nothing. He has no crystal in his palm. And then there's a lot of boring bits with the old man that, you know, maybe are played for cute back then, but they're really boring now. He's named all his cats and he's explaining why every cat has three names. And you're just like, whatever, dude. And they question him about his parents and they're surprised that he knew his parents. And he's sort of like, doesn't understand what they're talking about. He's like, who do you think raised me? So at that point, Logan is pretty well fixed that sanctuary doesn't exist, that it never existed. And it was created out of hope. And Jessica completely loses it. She freaks out. No, you know, it has to. And they're interrupted at this point because Francis enters. And at this point, Logan is off on another part of the set with the old guy. And he takes Jessica hostage. And at some point now, I think in the, you know, the main assembly area in the Capitol building that we all see on C-SPAN when they're, you know, doing yays and nay votes and voting on bills. And so from that upper section, Francis walks out with Jessica as a hostage. He still has his weapon. And he uses the phrase, you know, first he says, you know, I would have forgiven what had happened before then, but no, you had to, you know, come all this way. And he says at one point, you're terminated, runner. Of course, I couldn't help but think of two films that phrase may have been part of, which is The Running Man and The Terminator, which is kind of interesting. Then I think Jessica does something. She throws Francis's gun away and he jumps down. And now Francis and Logan have this hand-to-hand fight, which isn't bad, actually. I mean, you know, in this day and age, we'd get an amazingly choreographed, you know, martial arts fight, but it's pretty good. It's more like just two desperate guys fighting, and the camera stays on them, and you know they're grabbing things around them, and how they use each item and what they throw at each other. It's actually not a bad fight, you know. You follow it pretty well, and the tension's pretty high because, you know, Francis is out to kill both of them if he wins. At one point, Logan does get the upper hand, and Francis dies as a result of Logan just beating him back, not killing him directly, which, again, plays into Logan's character that he's not a cruel person, although he was as a Sandman, obviously. And they bury him, which is another concept that the old guy's got to explain to Jessica and Logan about burying and about death. And so then they reach this point where Logan realizes he wants to go back. They very unflatteringly give to Jessica the idea that she doesn't give a shit about anything else. She just wants to be here with Logan and let's never go back. And no, you're going to leave me and blah, blah, blah. It's pretty terrible. But he, you know, basically says that he couldn't live out here knowing that in the domes, these people are dying every week or every day, however often they do carousel. And it's, you know, the usual sexism. Women have no conscience and men have to do all the philosophical thinking, which is just ridiculous. And it is what it is. This is 1976. So, you know, we were still there. But they take the old man with them because they realize that he will be proof of everything that they say. They come back to the city and they come at it from a different angle this time. And we're treated to another matte painting of the power generation system, which is kind of done where there's this set of pools that are set up near the ocean. And when the tide comes up, water spills into these pools and I guess flows down, creating some pressure and maybe, you know, running some turbines. They don't give you the full Megilla, but it's pretty cool looking. It's pretty neat and it looks pretty functional, frankly. And it's kind of a cool setup. I think a lot of this was filmed in this very, at the time, was kind of new construction somewhere near Texas, like Fort Worth, Texas. There was this new place that went up. I'll have the exact name and then when I do the trivia, but so you see them actually walking through parts of the structure, which are really neat. So at one point, Logan and Jessica have to swim underwater to get back into the city. The old man can't do it, so he stands outside by this thing and waits. And then we have a very kind of deus ex machina ending. They wrap this movie up really fast. We cut to carousel, and then, you know, Logan and Jessica are standing on this balcony above everyone screaming about how it's all a lie, and the carousel goers all laugh at him. No one believes them, of course. So they're taken by Sandman, he and Jessica, and brought in front of the AI. And the AI interrogates him. And it does this cool thing. I mean, it's kind of goofy, but cool. It puts him in this kind of trance, and these four kind of cylindrical hologram generators basically come down, and they're little versions of his personality that are in, I guess it's split off his subconscious, and it's interrogating him subconsciously, which is a cool idea. A little side note, this is the first time, these are real holographic images, and it was the first time that holograms were ever used in a motion picture. So chalk one up for Logan's run there. But each hologram that's coming from his subconscious, it corroborates his story that there's no sanctuary. And so the AI gets somehow, you know, a classic old school, how you defeat an AI, give it a problem it can't solve. This is kind of stupid that it just doesn't compute that there's no sanctuary. It believes that it has to be. Even the AI is slave to this idea of sanctuary. You could go either way with that one. But unexplainably, as the AI short circuits, the entire city blows apart. And then there start to be explosions all over the place as the AI kind of dies. So the effects and the stunts are really bad. I mean, this could be like, you know, 1 million BC. It's just really, really cheesily done. But the last scene is the old man standing near the power generator, and all these people start coming out and down, and they touch him, and they gather around him and reach out to touch his face. And it's kind of like, you know, the city is dead, and now these people are all going to, you know, move out into the world and try to survive as their ancestors did, and we're done. So, you know, just a brief summary. It's chock full of really interesting ideas, I have to say. I mean, some really cool notions, as I've narrated earlier. Occasionally cinematically interesting, the matte paintings when they go out to DC and the carousel are really effective. There's not much in between. A lot of the interiors are very much stock 70s sci-fi looking things, nothing terribly interesting. Director Michael Anderson isn't particularly interesting as a filmmaker, so we're not getting any kind of, you know, cinematic juice here. You know, it's pretty functionally directed. But, you know, it's mostly really a B-grade affair. It's really a B-movie for real. And Michael York does his best to animate Logan, and, you know, he's very effusive and passionate, as he should be. Part of the problem is, you know, these characters of Logan 5 and Jessica 6, the very conception of who these characters are limits them being interesting because, you know, they purportedly come from this world full of children, basically, who are completely innocent of the world. You know, they're completely just, they play all the time and they're completely cared for and pampered, and then they die at 30. So, you know, not going to produce a lot of interesting peeps that you want to have a pint with. Let's put it that way. Box is really terrible. The robot, you know, it's really, the whole sequence is really goofy. For anyone who's interested, is Roscoe Lee Brown is the voice of Box. And the ending is really truncated. I tell you, I feel like Logan's Run would benefit from a Netflix treatment because, you know, there's a significant amount of time in the city in the beginning setting up the film. And then you've got a significant amount of time outside. And then if you're going to come back and do the rescue, you know, it's like three... It's like a 3-hour, 4-hour affair, you know? So they really, really truncated the ending here, which just makes it, you know, it kind of lessens the impact of the whole movie when you're done. It's a little neat when it, you know, when it finishes. So some trivia about Logan's Run. The love shop sequence originally ran much longer, but had to be cut down under pressure from the MGM censors. This is the sequence when they ran through the sort of, you know, the seraglio, as it were, or brothel. Or a sex club, which is really what it was. They also cut scenes including Box making a nude ice sculpture of Logan and Jessica. They cut certain characters visiting the, quote, Hallucimil, quote, shop in the arcade, which was cut for a depiction of drug use. And all of these cut scenes, you know, you can't really do a DVD because they were lost in what is now known as the, quote, Great MGM Purge when this billionaire Kirk Kerkorian bought MGM and sold off a whole bunch of stuff, basically didn't curate anything. So no great sort of Logan's Run remaster where you're going to get all this stuff, unfortunately. When the old man is showing Logan some of the portraits that used to hang on the walls of the Capitol, one of them was originally to have been President Richard Nixon. And the line was going to be, quote, they used to call him tricky something. According to director Michael Anderson, the gag was considered too controversial at the time and was dropped, although he had been impeached. He had resigned at that point. The waterfalls and steps that Logan jumps into to get back into the dome are real. This is an active pool of water gardens located in Fort Worth, Texas. The main pool used to be 9 feet deep, but after four people drowned there in 2004, actually near the spot where Logan and Jessica dove in, the pool was closed. When it reopened in 2007, the depth had been reduced to 2 feet. During the encounter between the old man and the runners, Logan and Jessica, the old man often quotes poems out of, quote, Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats by T.S. Eliot. So it was only after the box office success of Logan's Run, I think it did really well, that the author William F. Nolan wrote two sequels, being Logan's World and Logan's Search. The interior shots of the main hall of the city were filmed in the Great Hall at the Apparel Mart Shopping Mall in Dallas, Texas. The movie spawned a short-lived 14-episode CBS TV series, Logan's Run, which aired during the 77-78 season, so pretty quickly went right to series. The cityscape footage was reused by Paramount Pictures in Star Trek The Next Generation episode Tapestry. It is visible outside the windows of Picard's quarters. The ice cave sequence was actually filmed in the middle of the summer in Los Angeles. The people frozen in the ice were not mannequins, but extras who were spray-painted white. The extras all had to stand perfectly still for several minutes at a time for each take. The Sandman's guns worked using tiny butane gas cartridges and were difficult to make work reliably on the set as the gas did not always ignite when the trigger was pulled. So, there's also, this movie has been attempted to be remade over the past 15, 20 years. It's been in development hell forever. It still is. So no one, you know, is really not anywhere at this point. But at one point or another, the following people were attached to do it. Bryan Singer, Christopher McQuarrie, Joseph Kosinski, Alex Garland, Nicholas Wending Refn, Ryan Gosling, and currently resides in the no one's doing anything in the moment. So anyway, that's all I've got to say about Logan's Run. See you next time.